This recording accompanies the Language B Higher Level Examination, Paper 2, Listening Comprehension, for English, May 2024.
Cet enregistrement accompagne l'examen de Langue B, Niveau supérieur, Épreuve 2, Compréhension orale d'anglais, May 2024.
Esta grabación acompaña el examen de lengua B, nivel superior, prueba 2, comprensión auditiva, de inglés, mayo 2024.
The start and end of each audio text will be indicated by this sound.
Le début et la fin de chaque texte audio seront indiqués par ce son.
El inicio y el final de cada texto de audio se indicarán con este sonido.
The end of the examination will be indicated by this sound.
La fin de l'examen sera indiquée par ce son.
El final del examen se indicará con este sonido.
Text A. You now have 4 minutes to read the questions.
You are going to hear a radio host, Kara, interview Eric Chow about creating digital art.
Today, we have digital artist Eric Chow with us. Eric started out as a traditional painter, then turned fully digital recently, and his career took off for a second time. Now, here's Eric.
Thanks, Cara.
So, Eric, what prompted you to switch to digital art?
My traditional paintings did sell very well, but I felt my painting skills stopped progressing and I needed something to stretch myself. Then, one afternoon, I was playing with the sketch app on my daughter's tablet and I thought, that's fun. And that's how I started.
Nice. And do you still do traditional paintings?
Rarely, and just as gifts to my family and friends. All my commercial works are digital now.
And you sell your art digitally now. Don't you worry about copyright and the value of your works, since they can be copied so easily?
Well, imagine the Mona Lisa painting. It's the original copy in the museum that matters, not the replicas in a gift shop. That's the same with digital art. People enjoy owning the original copy, and it's really gaining lots of momentum these days.
I still don't get why people would do that. I don't think selling art digitally is that sustainable. Anyway, let's take a commercial break now. Eric, you know what? I do a bit of digital art for fun too. Isn't it great to have a mistake-free art piece thanks to technology?
Yes and no. The undo function is obviously useful, but I always like the blemishes on a canvas since they make an art piece unique and beautiful.
I'm a perfectionist, so I prefer a flawless piece. And drawing on a tablet is so simple and intuitive. Don't you agree?
Well, it was a steep learning curve for me, but it's worth it. The problem, though, is that there's so much you can do, and we digital artists often cannot make up our mind on what to do.
Oh, that's a surprise. And where do you find your inspiration?
I chat about my drafts with my artist friends.
I'm the opposite. I need absolute alone time for ideas to come. All right. My last question for you today, Eric. Would you agree with me that digital art education should be part of the school curriculum?
Oh, I'm all for it.
That's good to know. Thank you, Eric.
My pleasure.
You now have 2 minutes before you hear the recording for a second and final time.
Today, we have digital artist Eric Chow with us. Eric started out as a traditional painter, then turned fully digital recently, and his career took off for a second time. Now, here's Eric.
Thanks, Cara.
So, Eric, what prompted you to switch to digital art?
My traditional paintings did sell very well. But I felt my painting skills stopped progressing and I needed something to stretch myself. Then, one afternoon, I was playing with the sketch app on my daughter's tablet and I thought, that's fun. And that's how I started.
Nice. And do you still do traditional paintings?
Rarely, and just as gifts to my family and friends. All my commercial works are digital now.
And you sell your art digitally now. Don't you worry about copyright and the value of your works, since they can be copied so easily?
Well, imagine the Mona Lisa painting. It's the original copy in the museum that matters, not the replicas in a gift shop. That's the same with digital art. People enjoy owning the original copy, and it's really gaining lots of momentum these days.
I still don't get why people would do that. I don't think selling art digitally is that sustainable. Anyway, let's take a commercial break now. Eric, you know what? I do a bit of digital art for fun too. Isn't it great to have a mistake-free art piece thanks to technology?
Yes and no. The undo function is obviously useful, but I always like the blemishes on a canvas since they make an art piece unique and beautiful.
I'm a perfectionist, so I prefer a flawless piece. And drawing on a tablet is so simple and intuitive. Don't you agree?
Well, it was a steep learning curve for me, but it's worth it. The problem, though, is that there's so much you can do, and we digital artists often cannot make up our mind on what to do.
Oh, that's a surprise. And where do you find your inspiration?
I chat about my drafts with my artist friends.
I'm the opposite. I need absolute alone time for ideas to come. All right. My last question for you today, Eric. Would you agree with me that digital art education should be part of the school curriculum?
Oh, I'm all for it.
That's good to know. Thank you, Eric.
My pleasure.
You now have 2 minutes, 30 seconds to finish answering the questions. Text B. You now have 4 minutes to read the questions.
You are going to hear the boss of a company explaining their work-from-home guidelines.
Thanks for joining this meeting, everyone. We know a lot of you need the flexibility of working from home. That's why your supervisors can already allow you to do so without having to seek any further approval. However, to make sure that this is done fairly, the Human Resources Department has created a set of guidelines on working from home. They are still in draft form, though, and feedback is most welcome. Now, I want to stress that the company does recognize the benefits of working from home. So initially, these guidelines will be trialed for 1 year from June. After this time, they will be reviewed and revised as needed. During this year-long period, the Human Resources Department will be running workshops on best practices for working from home. They will also collect staff's feedback on the guidelines through questionnaires. That said, please keep an ongoing conversation with your supervisors to address queries. The Human Resources Department has also just emailed everyone a list of commonly asked questions and answers. They are not available on our website since they are not finalized, but are good for your reference for now. In terms of eligibility, anyone is welcome to apply, except for those who are still in the onboarding program. Retiring staff, regardless of the date of departure, are welcome to apply too. Normally, staff members from the Human Resources Department cannot work from home, but exceptions may be made on a case-by-case basis. Moving on, I want to draw your attention to a few important points in the guidelines. Let's take a quick look now. As you see, you'll need to submit a written request for working from home. The company will take into consideration your self-motivation and demonstrated ability to meet deadlines. These aspects are important for obvious reasons. And we want to ensure minimal impact on your team's daily operation and dynamics. The maximum number of days you can work from home is 2 days per week. If you require more days, you must first inform your supervisor, then forward your request to the Human Resources Manager to make a final decision. Also, you won't be permitted to work from home on staff training days since we cannot host these events online at the moment. As for acceptable work-from-home locations, you must be within 2 hours commuting distance from the office. Also, you cannot work from an overseas location because of tax complications. I know it's a lot to digest. Let's take a break and we'll go over the rest when we come back.
You now have 2 minutes before you hear the recording for a second and final time.
Thanks for joining this meeting, everyone. We know a lot of you need the flexibility of working from home. That's why your supervisors can already allow you to do so without having to seek any further approval. However, to make sure that this is done fairly, the Human Resources Department has created a set of guidelines on working from home. They are still in draft form, though, and feedback is most welcome. Now, I want to stress that the company does recognize the benefits of working from home. So initially, these guidelines will be trialed for 1 year from June. After this time, they will be reviewed and revised as needed. During this year-long period, the Human Resources Department will be running workshops on best practices for working from home. They will also collect staff's feedback on the guidelines through questionnaires. That said, please keep an ongoing conversation with your supervisors to address queries. The Human Resources Department has also just emailed everyone a list of commonly asked questions and answers. They are not available on our website since they are not finalized, but are good for your reference for now. In terms of eligibility, anyone is welcome to apply, except for those who are still in the onboarding program. Retiring staff, regardless of the date of departure, are welcome to apply too. Normally, staff members from the Human Resources Department cannot work from home, but exceptions may be made on a case-by-case basis. Moving on, I want to draw your attention to a few important points in the guidelines. Let's take a quick look now. As you see, you'll need to submit a written request for working from home. The company will take into consideration your self-motivation and demonstrated ability to meet deadlines. These aspects are important for obvious reasons. And we want to ensure minimal impact on your team's daily operation and dynamics. The maximum number of days you can work from home is 2 days per week. If you require more days, you must first inform your supervisor, then forward your request to the Human Resources Manager to make a final decision. Also, you won't be permitted to work from home on staff training days since we cannot host these events online at the moment. As for acceptable work-from-home locations, you must be within 2 hours commuting distance from the office. Also, you cannot work from an overseas location because of tax complications. I know it's a lot to digest. Let's take a break and we'll go over the rest when we come back.
You now have 2 minutes 30 seconds to finish answering the questions. Text C. You now have 4 minutes to read the questions.
You are going to hear two workers from a university's student affairs team, Aya and Dylan, discuss the problem of initiation rituals.
Hey, Aya. We should update our handbook for new students to raise awareness of initiation rituals. I mean, those that are run by some student organizations when new members join. They may think it's harmless fun, but we know these practices can easily turn toxic.
Agreed, Dylan. They're completely unnecessary and meaningless.
Exactly. The good news is, we only had 20 initiation rituals reported from last year. though I'm pretty sure it's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I know many actually agreed to go through the initiation ritual because it's sugar-coated as team building, and new students want to fit in. However, the university's stance is clear. We have zero tolerance toward these practices. Any form of it, even with a student's written consent, will result in serious sanctions. This is a campus-wide, universal rule with no exceptions. But we do rely on students reporting, though, in order to identify a case.
Perhaps we should give some examples of these rituals in the handbook, then, and tell students that initiation rituals are categorized into subtle, harassment, and high risk based on the severity.
Did most of the cases last year fall under the subtle category?
Actually, the harassment category got reported more often. I think it's because most people just dismissed subtle initiation rituals as harmless fun, so they didn't even say anything about it. And unfortunately, we had one high-risk case, which was unprecedented.
Yeah, I heard. I am glad that someone intervened, though.
But you know what? We did a survey before, and one-third of students said they witnessed initiation rituals but chose to do nothing. Most of them said they didn't know how to intervene. Maybe it's worth running a workshop on intervention skills.
True. And does the student handbook have a section on how to report initiation rituals?
Let's see. I think we're missing a section on this.
We should highlight that students can use the existing online reporting form to flag a case. Let's also mention that they will be able to use the Campus Life app for that from next month.
We should also tell them that they'll need to provide details of the incident when reporting. We don't need the names of the offenders, but the name of the student organisation is essential. It helps us track everyone down, especially those who plan these activities but are not directly involved in the scene.
Yes, they must also specify the location where it happened. That's an important piece of information.
Yep. It's just so frustrating, you know? Every student organisation has actually signed a pledge to stand against initiation rituals. Yet these rituals still occur every year.
I know. And there are so many healthy alternatives that are actually effective in team building. Running a community project together, for example, could be a good alternative.
It might be too time-consuming, though. I'd say simply some get-togethers will work.
You're right. A social will help them bond faster. All right. Let's revise the handbook now.
You now have 2 minutes before you hear the recording for a second and final time.
Hey, Aya. We should update our handbook for new students to raise awareness of initiation rituals. I mean, those that are run by some student organizations when new members join. They may think it's harmless fun, but we know these practices can easily turn toxic.
Agreed, Dylan. They're completely unnecessary and meaningless.
Exactly. The good news is, we only had 20 initiation rituals reported from last year, though I'm pretty sure it's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I know many actually agreed to go through the initiation ritual because it's sugar-coated as team building, and new students want to fit in. However, the university's stance is clear. We have zero tolerance toward these practices. Any form of it, even with a student's written consent, will result in serious sanctions. This is a campus-wide, universal rule with no exceptions. But we do rely on students reporting, though, in order to identify a case.
Perhaps we should give some examples of these rituals in the handbook, then, and tell students that initiation rituals are categorized into subtle, harassment, and high risk based on the severity.
Did most of the cases last year fall under the subtle category?
Actually, the harassment category got reported more often. I think it's because most people just dismissed subtle initiation rituals as harmless fun, so they didn't even say anything about it. And unfortunately, we had one high-risk case, which was unprecedented.
Yeah, I heard. I am glad that someone intervened, though.
But you know what? We did a survey before, and one-third of students said they witnessed initiation rituals but chose to do nothing. Most of them said they didn't know how to intervene. Maybe it's worth running a workshop on intervention skills.
True. And does the student handbook have a section on how to report initiation rituals?
Let's see. I think we're missing a section on this.
We should highlight that students can use the existing online reporting form to flag a case. Let's also mention that they will be able to use the Campus Life app for that from next month.
We should also tell them that they'll need to provide details of the incident when reporting. We don't need the names of the offenders, but the name of the student organization is essential. It helps us track everyone down, especially those who plan these activities but are not directly involved in the scene.
Yes, they must also specify the location where it happened. That's an important piece of information.
Yep. It's just so frustrating, you know? Every student organization has actually signed a pledge to stand against initiation rituals. Yet these rituals still occur every year.
I know. And there are so many healthy alternatives that are actually effective in team building. Running a community project together, for example, could be a good alternative.
It might be too time-consuming, though. I'd say simply some get-togethers will work.
You're right. A social will help them bond faster. All right. Let's revise the handbook now.
You now have the rest of the time to finish answering the questions.